This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. When someone has a disability, like a mobility issue or sensory impairment, they should not be prevented from seeking that diploma in higher education. But we're not going to sugarcoat it. Things can be tough. Students with disabilities typically take more time to graduate. They also have more difficulties with things like student loan debt. Along with physical disabilities, health and processing problems like learning disabilities, chronic illness, speech and language impairment, developmental delays, and emotional disturbance, they're all protected under federal law. How are San Antonio area colleges accommodating and supporting the needs of students with invisible and physical disabilities? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. You can call in at 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org as we talk about disability in higher education this afternoon. And again, the number to call in is 210-614-8980. We're joined by Melanie Cawthon. She is the co-founder and executive director of Disability SA. Cindy Morgan is the Senior Coordinator of Student Success for Disability Support Services, and she runs Project Access Program at Palo Alto College. Stephanie Malden is a student in the Project Access Program at Palo Alto. And with us on the line is Leah Davis, an attorney for Disability Rights Texas. Welcome, all of you. It's great to have all of y'all here this afternoon. Melanie, let me start with you. As the Executive Director of Disability San Antonio, Disability SA, what is the overall assessment of the situation for someone who is dealing with any number of disabilities? And they want to go to college.
So for individuals with physical disabilities, we are well on our way towards inclusion of individuals with physical disabilities. There's still issues when it comes to access for the whole college experience. The dorms may not be ADA compliant. Well, not compliant, but they're difficult to navigate. And so there's some difficulties there. When it comes to people with sensory disabilities, we still have some work to do, and better education of instructors and administrators on making sure that people are aware of the accommodations that can be made and making sure that the staff is supportive of individuals with these types of disabilities. And then with individuals who have cognitive disabilities, we have a really long way to go. We do have some programs that are helping to enable individuals with cognitive disabilities to participate in the college experience. Most are certificate level programs, but I'm super happy that here in San Antonio we have a program that actually works towards getting college credit and associate degrees. And then with online access, that helps to, as more and more colleges move towards online programs, that helps to eliminate a lot of the barriers that are out there. But again, as always, and with all issues that impact people with disabilities, the community awareness, the education, the greater understanding, and the greater degree of awareness that we have on how to help people to access their ability to higher education is of the greatest importance.
Leah Davis, attorney for Disability Rights Texas. Are there many potential individuals who want to go to school, want to get that college degree, but they're faced with a challenge of a disability and they feel like it's insurmountable? Is that a reality?
Unfortunately, it is. We certainly get a lot of calls and requests for assistance involving students who may be in their first college who are trying to get accommodations implemented. And for whatever reason, the college is not correctly implementing those accommodations. And so the students are asking for our help in getting the college to follow the law and provide them with the accommodations that they need. And they may be accommodations that they already received during high school. So they had gone through their previous academic career, getting the accommodations. And so once they move to college, they continue to need them and the school is not providing them. So unfortunately, that is something that we do see with some frequency.
Accommodations or support services that are available to students, and they can vary just as all these conditions vary with each individual. So, Cindy Morgan over at Project Access at Palo Alto College, it seems like the first stop that any student should have if they are planning to go to college is to figure out which office, where is the support office that I should be going to? I mean, there is support available. They just need to make that connection.
Absolutely, David, yes. I also run the Disability Support Services Department at Palo Alto College, and all of our sister colleges within Alamo College District have a disability office on campus. So we definitely do want to get awareness out to all the students that are coming in wanting to take classes, no matter whether they're coming traditional route in our college or coming through Project Access. Accommodations are always provided to students.
But a level of documentation, mm-hmm. that has to happen.
Yes. Yes. Students first need to self-disclose. So they self-identify by coming into our office and saying, I have a disability and I need to set up something for my classes. And then I kind of go over the information with them as far as what kind of documentation, if they already have it, whether it's from the high school or maybe from a doctor, some kind of a psychological evaluation.
The diagnosis of any condition.
Exactly. No matter what, it's just something that states what their disability is. And then provided that they have that, then we go ahead and schedule an intake appointment. And during that intake appointment is when we discuss what kind of accommodations may have helped for them in the past at the high school, and then what kind of accommodations we can provide at the college.
So students have advisors typically when they're trying to figure out what courses to take. Is this kind of along those same lines? I need an advisor who could help me figure out what's available to me, and also I can talk in very plain language about what I feel comfortable with, what my expectations are, what I want to be able to do for myself, and what I think I might need help with.
Yes. So the college, actually, we have, for students with disabilities, they actually have two advisors. They'll have their certified advisor that is assigned to them based on the institute of study that they're wanting to come into, and then I act as their secondary advisor, providing the accommodations for them.
And students will tell you, like, you know, I'm in a mobility chair, that's all. I can do everything else. I just need to be able to get to my classes. Or they'll
Sure.
tell you other things, like, okay, I have these other conditions.
Yes, absolutely.
So how does those conversations go? Do students, they come to you with a high level anxieties? Like, I really can't wait to have this conversation and get it over with?
Yes, there's varying students that come in. Some, yes, definitely. And there's the stigma, too, that, you know, a lot of students don't want to come in because they feel like, okay, I'm in college now. I don't want people to know I have a disability. So there's lots of different conversations with those students. We've got to treat them individually and figure out, again, what they need and what's going to help them. But for students that might be in a wheelchair that maybe don't have a cognitive disability, it's just simply physical, then there are still accommodations that I can put in place for them, you know, maybe allowing a longer time to get to class, making sure that they're given emergency evacuation assistance should a fire drill happen on campus, something like that. So, yes, there's definitely things that we can help them.
We're talking about disability in higher education. Anyone with a disability, they need to have to let everyone know that what's happening with them, what their expectations are. A disability should not be a deciding factor. If anyone willing to go to campus, they should be able to go to college and get that degree. We're going to be talking about that in the remaining hour. We invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. What questions and comments do you have? We definitely want to hear your stories as well. You don't have to give your name, but we'd love to talk to you and hear your story. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about disability in higher education, disability of every sort. There's the physical disability. Maybe someone is in a mobility chair. They've had a spinal cord injury. They're dealing with a disease, all sorts of different conditions out there, chronic health conditions. Also, we have people with invisible disabilities as well, and the campuses are getting better at opening up to all of students who want to come and become and graduates. Let's go to the phones, 210-614-8980. Kimberly is on the line. Kimberly, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to say I have a visual disability, and I have gone through college three times, twice traditional campus and then once online. And I just want to acknowledge that we still have a long ways to go to get equal access to things, but we have come a long way. There was absolutely no accommodations whatsoever for people with disabilities. When I started college, I had to, you know, go up, find a reader, ask if I could take lectures, you know, all that stuff. And now there is a lot available. You do have to look for it. You sometimes have to ask for it, and you have to self-identify. And we still have a long way to go.
All right, Kimberly, thank you for the call. I appreciate that perspective. Leah Davis, attorney for Disability Rights Texas. Kimberly says we've come a long way, but there's more victories to be seen. What do you think we need to be doing now?
Well, there's a lot of areas that I think there still needs to be a big improvement on. I know that she mentioned that her disability was a visual impairment, and we are seeing issues with websites and course programs of schools and colleges not being accessible to screen reading technology. So somebody who uses a screen reader to read content on a computer screen because of a visual impairment is not able to access the educational material because the website itself is not accessible to screen readers. So that's one area in which there still needs to be improvement. Another example is for individuals who have mental health disabilities. We see a lot of issues with people with various psychiatric impairments or mental health issues who have to take a leave of absence and then are not allowed to return to the school for various reasons. The Bazelon Center for Mental Health Law in D.C. is doing really good work on this issue, but that is something that we see with frequency of individuals with mental illness who are being discriminated against in post-secondary education.
Thank you. And let's go to another caller. This is Mary Alice. Mary Alice, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah, thank you for taking my call. So I am currently a junior at A&M San Antonio, and I recently started seeing a therapist on campus for a lifetime of depression and anxiety. I guess my comment is that I've realized that my depression and anxiety has caused me to have a seven-year bachelor's degree. It's going to end up being about 7 years. And I guess my comment is that when I started my therapy in March, I feel like I should have been kind of already put on the list of the disabled students, you know, just allowing more time for assignments or, you know, sometimes my depression is, you know, a little debilitating where it's difficult to make it to class. But they gave me the resources to, you know, go to the disability office and get registered and go through the intake process and everything like that. But I don't know. I just kind of feel like we should just automatically be put on that list because we're being a therapist on campus. So I feel like it would make sense if we were already
right
kind of intake.
Interesting. You know? Mary Alice, thank you for that. So Cindy Morgan, you know, how would that, you know, Mary Alice was on campus receiving services for her depression and anxiety, and she thought that that should have helped her be able to get accommodations.
Okay, so hi, Mary Alice. What I would address to that is there are the HIPAA violations. So even though she might be seeing a therapist on campus, that therapist cannot share information with the disability office. The same way as when students register with our office, I cannot divulge their disabilities with instructors on campus. They are all protected, the confidentiality, all by the ADA law. So what may have happened, though, is, and I'm not sure if this did happen for you, Mary Alice, but when you were seeing the therapist, did they refer you to the disability office?
And Mary Alice, let me put her back on. Mary Alice, did that happen?
Yeah, they gave me the information. It's just such a long process of, you know, filling out a form, making an appointment, and all that stuff. And when you're juggling, you know, a job and a workload, you know, it gets a little stressful.
Sure does. Okay, Mary Alice, thank you for that. So that's a challenge as well. But at the end of the day, you really, the best advocate you're going to have is yourself.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, the students, you know, even though they may not necessarily have received that intake appointment to be on that list to receive accommodations, maybe even just simply communicating with their instructors just to let them know, hey, I'm in the process of trying to make this appointment. I don't have it yet. Is there something you can kind of help me do? And again, not to put too much stress on our instructors either, because legally they don't have to give accommodations without receiving that letter of accommodation because nothing has been put in place yet. But maybe just, you know, having that conversation, some kind of agreement can take place.
So let me, I have a special guest in the studio, Stephanie Malden. She's a student with the Project Access Program at Palo Alto. Stephanie, welcome to The Source. Thank you so much for coming up here today. Can you talk about your experience going to college? How has that been working for you?
It's going well.
And how long have you been going? What year are you? How long have you been going to college?
Two semesters.
Okay. And what are you studying?
I'm studying general office.
Level one
certificate.
So we're learning how to work in an office.
Mm-hmm.
Being so that someone would, you know, you would get a job working in an office someday.
Yes.
And so what kind of skills are you developing to do that?
Business English. I mean, receive office procedures. Beginning keyboarding.
Cool. So, I mean, you're developing all the skills that anyone would need to have in order to work in an office. You know, got to be able to do the keyboarding, got to figure out some of these issues. So, Cindy, you work very closely with Stephanie in helping her get to, you know, accomplish these academic goals. So how does that work?
Yeah, so Project Access, just to give you a brief background on that. So this program was brought to a campus conversation several years ago because we were told about the need for this type of program in the city. The city of San Antonio didn't have a program targeted for students with intellectual disabilities. So with that lack of post-secondary education, and we did a lot of research to kind of come upon to put this program together, Project Access. And we partnered with our business department on campus to figure out that a general office level one certificate was the best basic way to start to get these students into the college. And then for Stephanie, so she's what we refer to as cohort two. She's the second, no, it's cohort three, excuse me. Two. Yes, okay, two. Sorry, we've got so many cohorts of students that have started in. So she's cohort two. So she's actually going to be finishing this fall semester with her third semester of classes. And so it's been a lot learning process, of course, for Stephanie. Some of the students, she's a little shy right now, but not normally in class. But there's a lot of different things that they're learning there. They are working on records and information management. That's what they just finished this last 8 weeks in the semester. So it's building those marketable skills so that they can go out and get a job either in an office setting or possibly customer service.
So Stephanie, how you like going to school?
It's okay.
Is this something that you wanted to do? That you said this was a goal that I had.
This is a goal that I wanted to have because I wanted to learn more things and go have the business office, being a business woman. I always wanted to.
And you have friends and fellow students that you're able to interact with and study partners and all that?
Mm-hmm. So I can get some help doing my schoolwork I need to do.
And you plan on graduating very soon. And mm-hmm. You'll be out and working. And that's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Melanie?
And while the certificate could help her get a job in an office environment, Stephanie actually will take these skills in keyboarding and business English and administrative skills back to her business that she started, Four Leaf Coffee. So she is an entrepreneur, and so she will be utilizing the skills that she learns through this certificate program, which gives you college credit in her personal business. But also, I think, Stephanie, you're going to be working towards your associate's, so you're going to go past this certificate and continue her educational process.
I want to know about this coffee. That always gets my attention, mention coffee. What is Four Leaf Coffee?
It's all three of them. There's coffee, tea, and hot chocolate. That's what we're ordering right now.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
And do you make the coffee?
We have to order coffee online. Okay.
That sounds...
Store online and go on. It's on the website.
People order the coffee from Four Leaf Coffee, and it's a company. Is it an online? And it's an online company.
It's an online.
Okay.
Store.
And where do you see that going? How do you want to develop that?
Develop the.
Store. I mean, like, is this something that you're doing? This is a money making enterprise that you've come up with.
I'm making more money. I'm getting more customers coming to me. And my mom as well. My mom's involved in this coffee business I'm doing.
That's great.
Getting more help from my mom.
Well, I mean, that's fantastic. It's great to have help and support. And so, Cindy Morgan, with Project Access Program at Palo Alto College, how many students do you have, like Stephanie, who are, I mean, they're go-getters?
Yes, absolutely. We've got several students that are in the program. We're on our fourth cohort right now. We're recruiting.
A cohort means like a class, right?
Yeah, so a cohort, it's the design, how we design the courses. So the cohort basically means that these students are brought in together and they travel throughout each semester in all the classes so that they can be successful together. They can learn off each other. Like she said, she can make friends. They can have study groups, things like that. So it's just, we found that it was a very successful design to keep these students in this group of students called the cohort.
So Leah Davis, attorney for Disability Rights Texas, when you hear the story of Stephanie going to college, learning the office skills, doing an entrepreneur thing, making money with Four Leaf Coffee, I mean, is this the dream of Disability Rights Texas, that people should be able to do this?
I think that's fantastic. I was not familiar with the business, the Four Leaf Coffee business, but I was really happy to hear about it. I also want to mention that for individuals who are not in the entrepreneurial spirit, but are rather going to find a job and find employment out there, that there are laws that require employers to provide accommodations to employees with disabilities under Title I of the ADA. So if you're not your own boss, because we all can't be our own bosses, there still are provisions that would provide protections for people with disabilities so that they can find jobs and get the right accommodations to be successful.
But a lot of employers are kind of like, you know, they don't want to be yoked to providing certain services or support. They just want to, you know, how do we do that in a way that it still keeps opportunity open to people who want to be hired? Leah?
Well, there's a couple of different things that we can take into account. One, the ADA, Title I of the ADA, makes it legally a requirement to provide accommodations. Two, under the ADA, the person has to be...
Okay, we lost Leah Davis there. It's important information. We'll try and get that reconnected, and we'll find out more about the requirements that employers have, but also schools have. There's a school, people with disabilities, you know, they are protected. We have the ADA, and what are their rights? We're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break. We'll get to some callers as well. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980, as we talk about disability in higher education. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about disability in higher education. What are your rights if you are a student who has a disability? What is reasonable and what do the schools providing for you in ways of accommodation and support? How do you access these services? And how do you sometimes, you know, it's not always easy. I mean, you got to convince people sometimes, and what skills do you need to do that? What's practical as well in terms of best practices to make sure that you get what you need in order to find your road to success on a college campus? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And Teresa is on the line. And Teresa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes, thank you. I'm so excited to hear your discussion this morning.
Well, thank you.
My daughter has what you call an invisible challenge. It's nothing, not a physical challenge. It's something to do with her nervous system. And so she struggled even in high school, and we were so worried she wouldn't be able to make it to college.
Oh, we lost the caller. That's so. How do we deal with parse out the differences between disability for mental health issues and also intellectual disabilities that are out there? And how do different how do schools sort of classify that and make support available? And I believe we now have Leah Davis from Disability Rights back again, right? Disability Rights Texas. Leah, are you there?
I am. I apologize for the disconnection.
No. Well, probably wasn't your fault. It's probably, you know, the gremlins in the system. So what about the differences between mental health issues and intellectual disabilities, and how is that seen as how campuses deal with that?
Well, there are obvious differences in terms of the disability themselves, but the process by which somebody would request an accommodation, the documentation that they would need to provide, that actually tends to be the same. So if somebody has an invisible disability, they do need to make their disability known and then go through the process of providing the correct documentation to support the request for an accommodation, showing what they need, the connection between the accommodation request and the disability. And so that process actually is the same regardless of what the disability is. If somebody has a visible disability, they may not need to provide that same documentation since they have a disability that others can observe.
So we hear sometimes about students requesting extra time for assignments or on tests. And is how big of an ask is something like that, Leah Davis?
Well, I think that's something that a lot of people with disabilities may need. Like I said, there does need to be a connection showing between the disability itself and the request for the accommodation. So the provider, whether it be a physician or a psychologist or a vocational rehabilitation counselor, needs to be able to explain how the request itself relates to the disability such that the college or university can understand it and then grant it when appropriate.
Melanie Cawthon, co-founder and executive director of Disability SA. You've taken on so much, you know, in Disability SA, all the issues, and always we come back to stigma, and the society's acceptance needs to be a part of this. So when we talk about students going to campus and taking classes and being part of the campus experience who are dealing with different types of disabilities, that's what a college campus should look like, right?
Yes, and that is why when you look at the name of Disability SA, the ability is capitalized. So we all have the ability. It's just how we approach things in different ways to be able to realize that capability. And the more that we accommodate and the more that we provide the supports that are necessary. So we're not making exceptions. We're not making excuses. We're just offering the supports that enable people to reach their capability.
All right, back to the phone lines with Michael. Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, thank you for allowing me to be on the show this afternoon. So I'm blind, and I've had to deal with a number of challenges, and hearing some of the things brought up in this discussion just reminded me of a lot of what I had to deal with. And I'm more of a technology person. I got my degree in computer information systems, and so I've really leaned on the available technology at a given time to try and overcome some of these challenges. And it's a lot of it has to do with just being aware of it, and that's one of the challenges that we have to overcome is getting the information out there so that people can take advantage of the technologies. And here you're talking about college and trying to deal with some of the barriers that come with that. Certainly as a blind person, getting access to computer applications and textbooks is a problem. I'm doing right now, I'm working on a master's, and it's all online. And I'm dealing with things like Blackboard, and that has its own challenges that you have to overcome. And one of the neat things about technology is it's always progressing. So just as an example, right now I'm using a new technology that just came out maybe 2 years ago called Era. And what's really neat about this particular service is that if I'm working on a project that I can't see it, like right now I have to write a lot of papers, and I have to do all kinds of special formatting and citations and all that. Well, a lot of that I miss it, you know. Even though I'm using software that helps me to read it, I'm not always able to see all the formatting problems. And so this Era service provides a live agent who's able to see what I'm doing on the computer and can point out these things to me. And that wasn't available, you know, 5-10 years ago. And so I was having to rely a lot on my own to overcome these kind of challenges. So I think for people who are in college that want to get access to these different kinds of technologies, it's a lot of it has to do with doing our own research. And I just encourage people to look into things like Facebook groups where other blind people are college students and trying to overcome some of these problems.
Right. But it seems to me that's a big challenge to try to figure out the technology that works for you when you're visually impaired. I mean, how do you first get started? I mean, aren't there supposed to be some sort of, someone should be curating this type of technology for you?
There are different resources, but not everyone is able to tap into those resources. A lot of it's just word of mouth sometimes, or if you're getting assistance from the state, you perhaps have a visual rehab counselor who can point that out to you. But, I mean, I've experienced it myself where, I work for the San Antonio Lighthouse for the Blind, and there's countless numbers of times where people will come to me and they say they've never heard of this before. College students, I've spoken to different disability program coordinators, and they've told me that they've gotten students that just didn't know about some of these things, and it just boggles the mind how this happens, and so it ends up being the case that a lot of people do have to learn this kind of just through word of mouth or just doing their own research. But there are resources out there like the Lighthouse for the Blind and other nonprofit organizations where you have people who have that kind of experience and it can at least point you in the right direction.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in, Michael. I really appreciate what you brought to the table. So I'm going to go back to Leah Davis, attorney for Disability Rights Texas. And when it comes to people who are blind, there are a lot of technological innovations that are happening that can help them navigate, especially things in this internet world. But you do need people to kind of just get you started. I mean, and that's not always available to an easy ask for many people.
Right. So I'll say two things about that. The first has to do with something I mentioned earlier about website accessibility. And Michael mentioned Blackboard, and I assume that probably he's had issues with accessing Blackboard.
Who hasn't? I mean, if you're in college and you're dealing with Blackboard, I mean, that is, it's not easy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it can be certainly made even more challenging when screen reading software doesn't access all the information on it, or you can't click past a certain page because your screen reader doesn't see it because the programmers of the program didn't put in the right tags to make it such that your screen reader can read the information. So on that line, it's essential for the colleges to know the accessibility of the software that they're using and the websites that they're contracting with or building themselves, but also that when people are building websites, to keep accessibility in mind, not only does the law require accessibility, it's easier to do it on the front end. So if you can build accessibility into your app, into your website as you go, that's the easiest way to do it to make sure that it's inclusive and also compliant with the ADA. But along the other question about how does one find out about these different technologies, I think that Michael is right that there are perhaps programs through the state, TWC, the Voc Rehab Counselors, or the Division of Blind Services that can assist with Voc Rehab Counselors as well. Membership organizations, he mentioned Facebook groups, and it is sometimes self-advocacy that you really have to learn about it through your own research, through your own discovery. There's a National Federation of the Blind, the American Council of the Blind. Those are membership organizations in which you might connect with other individuals who are blind who would know about technologies that they've used and had success with.
Right. It seems like someone like Michael would be an ideal hire for someone who is designing websites, looking to make sure that there's this huge population of people who are visually impaired that would benefit by having these things tested by people who also live in that world.
That's right, and it's really easy. Like I said, especially if you're doing it on the front end, it's really easy to make sure that it's accessible as you're building a website or a phone application.
Okay, and so, and Melanie Cawthon, you know, at Disability SA, are you able to help people connect to these innovations?
So at Disability SA, we help people connect to the resources that are most broad. So if somebody called and wanted technology assistance, we would probably connect them with the San Antonio Lighthouse for the Blind, who could get more granular in those technologies. We connect with the various connectors in town. So depending on what you're looking for, we can help at least get you one step closer to those
groups,
services.
And people who also, you know, want to socialize, talk about what you've gone through, and figure out, learn from their experiences as well.
We connect people with each other, with the resources in the community and the information they need to become more productive, independent, and engaged.
Okay, so we're going to take another break. We'll be right back talking more about disability in higher education. What are the opportunities here in San Antonio? Where can you turn to for help? The number to call in, 210-614-8980. We'll be right back. A disability should not be the deciding factor if a willing student should or shouldn't go to university. There is help available, and there is the law that is supposed to prevent discrimination based on disability. What are the students' rights, and what are the best practices for getting that degree? We want to hear from you. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Let's check in again with Stephanie Malden. She's a student at the Project Access Program at Palo Alto. And so, Stephanie, talk about your overall experience. You know, how have you been... You've been liking everything you've been doing at school?
Yes, sir, I do.
And what kind of grades you've been getting?
I'm getting A's and B's every time I go to class.
So what area do you think that you're, you know, what's your strongest area in your classes?
Man, it's hard.
I mean, you're doing keyboarding. I know that's something that people always need.
Well, the first class I'm doing was I was doing college learning.
Uh-huh.
And then keyboarding, that's my first semester. My second semester was business English and office procedures. And I just got done with records information. And now I'm doing business math and job search skills. Those are two I'm doing right now.
That sounds like they're keeping you pretty busy.
Yes, sure.
All right. So I understand that while we've been on the air, that orders have come in for your coffee service, Four Leaf Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So that just shows you the power of advertising, the power of radio, getting word out there for your product. And you will be graduating, you know, and going on to getting a full associate's degree.
I'm getting a certificate at the end of my third semester.
And then going on for even further on. Mm-hmm. And so as other students think about doing this as well, what would you tell them? That this is to go for it, or what would be your advice?
My advice? Well, if you go to regular colleges, you will walk. Some can walk the stage and some can get certificates if you want to go on.
Excellent. And so as you've been helping Stephanie, Cindy Morgan, Senior Coordinator of Student Success for Disability Support Services and the Project Access Program at Palo Alto College, talk about the you know, how this program is being coordinated. I mean, does this run parallel with other classes that are happening? Is it a student? Do the students commingle? I mean, how does it work? It's not like totally different, and it's on campus with everyone else, right?
That is correct. Yes, these students are on campus, so they are actual college students enrolled in classes. These are actual college credit earning classes as well. So it's not just like continuing education. So when they finish with this certificate, they will walk away with 16 college credit hours. They have every opportunity to be on campus with other students as well. It's just, again, that they happen to be in a smaller class size, which really helps with that instructor being able to give that one-on-one experience to that student.
And the number is 210-614-8980 if you want to call in and give tell us your story about disability in higher education in San Antonio. But Leah Davis, attorney for Disability Rights Texas, is not always rosy out there. Lawsuits are filed all the time for people saying this university, this campus, is not accommodating my needs.
Right. So like I said at the beginning of the show, we do get many requests for assistance from individuals who are enrolled in college and are not getting the accommodations that they've requested, and perhaps their accommodations they had received during their high school education. If that happens, we recommend students first go through the process at the school. Usually schools have an internal grievance process in which they can file a complaint within the school to try to get it resolved. And, of course, that internal grievance would be done after they've already worked directly with the Office for Students with Disabilities to try to get it resolved. If the internal grievance procedure doesn't work, they can file a complaint with the Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights, and the Department of Education is a federal agency, and the Office of Civil Rights would investigate complaints of disability discrimination, which a failure to provide an accommodation would be. From there, they do still have the option, or they could go directly to filing a lawsuit about the issue, and they could file the lawsuit in federal or state court. There's typically a 2-year deadline for them to file a lawsuit about these issues, whereas the complaint with the Department of Education has a 180-day deadline.
Now, a lot of students require service animals, service dogs particularly, when they go to school. Is that something that Melanie Carlton, you know, with Disability SA, do y'all see that as an issue, people with service dogs? I mean, now it's kind of becoming more accepted.
Yes. So service animals are accepted by the requirements of the ADA, but where we run into issues is with support animals. So the only animals that are recognized as service animals are dogs and miniature horses. But don't take your miniature horse to school. I'm just kidding. You can if you have one. So the support animals is the area where people who have an animal that helps them with anxiety or that helps them with certain types of helps them to cope in certain situations, those animals are not legally allowed or required to be allowed in the classroom setting. So I think there's a lot of room for growth and understanding and licensing that needs to be done in the area of support animals. But if you have a service animal, that animal is allowed in the classroom.
And when we talk about, you know, students typically need more time to get through higher education than typically, you know, functioning students. You know, it takes more semesters to get that degree. That means, you know, they're going to rack up more student debt, and so that becomes a problem as well. That's why and becomes a barrier for students. So, Leah Davis at Disability Rights Texas. Is there any sort of relief or some sort of programs out there for students who have disabilities to pay for college?
They can get assistance through the Texas Workforce Commission's Voc Rehab program, like I've mentioned a few times, who can provide assistance with funding for helping pay for education such that they can get job placement in the future. So there are some opportunities for assistance with financial assistance through the state. I also did want to circle back to talk about the service animal versus emotional support animal issue, which I won't go into in too much depth because it is a very complex issue. Schools do have obligations for emotional support animals in the housing context. The Fair Housing Act does cover emotional support animals, but in the public areas of a university, only service animals would be allowed. But service animals can still be animals that are trained as psychiatric service animals. So just because someone has a mental health disability doesn't mean they can't still have a service animal. And we see a lot of individuals with PTSD who have received service animals and had a tremendous amount of success having a service animal that is trained to do things such as alert them to when somebody's going to be coming up behind them so they don't have a PTSD episode or get startled by somebody coming up behind them, helping them travel through a busy, crowded building such that they have an animal between them and others, and the animal's trained to specifically do these tasks to assist this person with a disability. So I want to make it clear that just because somebody has a psychiatric impairment doesn't mean that they can't still have a trained service animal.
But then there are the people who self-diagnosed the need for a comfort animal, and then they were able to buy, you can buy these at the store or online, a vest for any dog, and suddenly, you know, that's a thing. Is that a problem on campus? You know, now that universities have to deal with Leah Davis.
Right. So the vest or the certificate doesn't have any legal significance. So yes, somebody could go online and deceptively buy this vest or this certificate, but legally that doesn't mean anything. And the university or the college in a housing context is allowed to ask for information to support the need for an emotional support animal. So there is that that ability to get that verification to make sure that this is supported by a physician, a psychologist, or other type of counselor. So it's not something that they can just go online and get a vest and then suddenly be allowed to have an animal in the dorm or in public.
So this goes back again to the issue of getting documentation and diagnosis. And Cindy Morgan, you say that this is what people really have got to establish and then come to the office and be able to talk about what their support needs would be.
Absolutely. And just to give you an example of some of the accommodations that are more common that will help students is, you talked about extra time earlier. We do offer extended test time for those that may need that. Maybe somebody does need a reader for their exam, note-taking assistance, use of an audio recorder. And then as far as tutoring, that we have free tutoring services on our campus that we can refer them to as well. So there's lots of support.
Right. And but when you have people who are dealing with certain emotional issues like PTSD, having the pressure of a test, does that become the issue and why you would give them extra time? And that takes that gives them more a different sort of framework for working on the test.
Exactly. And we have, with the extra test time, the students don't take the exams in the classroom. They schedule it with our Disability Support Services Department. So it's a small room, quieter environment, and that definitely does help with their anxiety.
All right. And so anyone who has first questions to ask about, I want to go to college, university, but I do have these disability issues, they would first go to where to start working on that, Melanie?
So as it's been repeated, we need to get that diagnosis. We need to get the notifications, the paperwork. So go to your physician, get that information, and then go to your disability service office at the university.
And then they'll help you out along the ways. I certainly want to thank our special guest that we had this afternoon, Stephanie Malden, student with the Project Access Program at Palo Alto, Melanie Calton, and Cindy Morgan, and Leah Davis, an attorney for Disability Rights Texas. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.